Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're studying the Billy Meier case today, and I'm going to pick back up in a bit with where we left off in the Might of Thoughts, talking about the life power, which I think in the German is Lebenskraft. Very interesting, very profound, a bit of information. I just wanted to talk shortly, very quickly, about Billy Edward Albert Meier in general. The Meier story, the Meier information, says that his spirit form is a universal prophet. And supposedly every universe brings forth a universal prophet, which is repeatedly incarnating in order to help people of various kinds speeding up in their evolution. And evolution is a very important concept because different living things have different kinds of evolution. And one kind of evolution is called the conscious evolution of the consciousness, which is the kind of evolution that humans go for. And they refer to Billy's spirit form as the Nokedamian spirit form. And it literally came back from a spiritual plane called Arahat Atharasata in order to dwell in human spirit forms again and in order to teach some of the information we're going to get into today. Nokedamian is, the term means the unblemished precious one. And the spirit form of Edward Albert Meier is about 9.6 billion years old. And it takes a spirit a very long time to evolve, especially up into these higher spiritual planes where it doesn't even need a physical body anymore. One of the previous personalities of Edward Albert Meier was an individual named Nokedamian, who was originally from a planet called Sadar, which is some 3 billion light years from Earth, in the Lyran galaxy. One of the later incarnations of Edward Albert Meier, I should say one of the earlier, one of the incarnations closer to our time, is a prophet named Henoch, which I believe was here about 389,000 years ago. And Quetzal discussed the line of Henoch in Contact 228. Quetzal said, Semyase and I, as well as Ptah and his father, Svath, as well as my father, have always belonged paternally to a line of descendants that leads back to Henoch and Nokedamian. So these contacts that Billy has are kind of a life, kind of a family type thing, an ancestor, because Svath was in a line of descendants that goes back to Henoch and Nokedamian. People often ask, well, why does Billy have these contacts? So this is one of the reasons, because he's in this family tree of Henoch He's in the family tree of Nocodemian. In the line of Henoch is mentioned in Sfaf's explanation, and this is down around line 56, I think it says, for the spiritual teaching, which has been the teaching of Nocodemian, Henoch, and all your former personality since time immemorial, you should, as it was in all past times, only require a reciprocal gift, a will to learn, love, peace, freedom, harmony, joy, diligence, equitableness, and humaneness, as well as the quality of being human, not, however, any material things through which you could achieve wealth. Because if you want to acquire such, you should create this through the work of your hands, not, however, through growing rich through the spiritual teaching. Well, there are two semyasas in the line of Henoch. I don't know which is which or how that all works, but there is a semyasa mentioned in Contact Report 9, which was on the earth about 13,000 years ago. And semyasa was the highest leader of the sub-leaders, a group of extraterrestrials who were on the earth. This was near the end of Atlantis and Lemuria time. And semyasa mated with an Eva, a female human being. And the offspring was called an Adam, which meant earth human being. So there were two semyasas in this Nocodemian lineage. I don't know which one was truly, one was Billy, was in Billy's line, and one was not. And there's also an interesting Henoch. There are four Henochs. Henoch 1, 2, 3, 4, and they came at different times. And during one of these Henochs, was here during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, and this is when the North Pole was in a different configuration than it is now. The North Pole was a very warm area. It was very beautiful. It was in the land of what they called Hyperborea, which really is analogous to Florida. Yes, Florida existed where the North Pole is, and after the shift of the planet during the Great Catastrophe, Atlantis and Lemuria, Florida still kept a pretty good climate, but nothing like it was. It was at the North Pole, believe it or not, it was even better. Much, much better. The prophet Elijah was born around 891 BC. He was known as the lover of creation. His disciple, Elias, is mentioned in the Talmud of Emmanuel. In Contact 229, it's explained that Elijah was flown to Srinagar, Kashmir in India by a beam ship in 842 BC. In Contact Report 230, excuse me, it talks about the predictions of the prophet of Elijah. Now, these predictions are kind of, excuse me about that cough. These predictions are kind of dire, as you can imagine. And we have Isaiah, Jeremiah, Socrates, Aristotle, Emmanuel, Muhammad, Johann Georg Faust, Galileo, Wolfgang Amadeus, Mozart, Mendelssohn, Grigori Rasputin, and Billy Edward Albert Meyer. So I just wanted to go over that very, very quickly and remind everyone of the lineage of Nocodemian. I find that extremely interesting. I'm going to play some Songbirds stuff again. This is straight from the Semyase Silver Star Center. They have a whole bunch of songbirds that they kind of keep in that area, and I think it's good, and I'm going to take just a very short break, and we'll be right back. And now you get to listen to the songbirds in Switzerland. Here we go. Sorry for that little break. That was a lot of songbirds, and they're very interesting to listen to. I want to just, again, I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here. Billy Edward Albert Meyer, I want to bring us back to kind of the center, the grounding again. And in case some people are new to the show, Edward Albert Meyer, he's 80 years old. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland. And the little place is called Hinterschmidt-Rudy. It's about 45 minutes east of Zurich in the snow-capped mountains of Switzerland in the beautiful green pine forest. Billy's very interesting experiences go all the way back to a time when he was 4 years old, when he woke up, crawled out a lower window in his bedroom and looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he realized that there was an invisible light that he called the love of creation. And he said all these profound things, and he wrote very profound things later about this experience. Billy said, "I saw that the space between the stars was empty and yet not empty. And I saw the light of the stars, and I realized that there was also an invisible light called the love of creation." And Billy felt this deep longing for faraway worlds and distant places. And he knew at that point what his life purpose was. And he knew what his life mission was. You see, young Billy was getting impulses from the storage banks. Our universe has storage banks. And our planet has storage banks, and our solar system has storage banks. And Billy was getting impulse information. They're like signals. And Billy, for example, would later write, "And indeed, the beaming stars were there, which stirred in me an unfamiliar longing for the vast distance and the faraway worlds." And then he just said the following. He said, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars," and he mentioned that he suddenly knew who he was, and how I am, and what my mission on this earth is. And Billy knew at a very young age that everything that exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite true love of the mighty universal consciousness. So Billy's life became very interesting because he started to meet with a man named Svath. And I explained earlier that Svath was actually in this Nokodamian lineage, or in this lineage of teachers, so to speak. And Svath met with Billy for 11 years and taught him many things. And then Billy met with his second mentor, a woman named Asket from the Tao universe that met with him for 11 years and taught him many things. And then Billy had 11 years of no contacts, and he lived a normal life, but I don't think Billy's ever lived a normal life. He went to the Middle East. He met his wife, Calliope. He lost his left arm in a bus accident and brought her back to Switzerland. They had three children. Billy kept doing his writings and taking odd jobs here and there to make a little money. And then in the middle 1970s, he started to get the cooling sensation on his forehead again, which would happen before his telepathic contacts. And then in 1975, a woman named Semyasi landed her beam ship in Switzerland, and Billy would ride his moped out to the sites, and eventually she'd come out of the ship, and then she would start to teach him many things, particularly about creation, about the teaching of the spirit information, about the amazing history of the earth and the strange history of the earth. However, Billy's meetings with Semyasi were cut short tragically when one of the people in the Silver Star building there had inadvertently come in when Semyasi and Billy were talking, and this caused Semyasi to lose control of her body. You see, these people are so evolved that they can sense all of our unstable and unhealthy thinking, and it's always a very, very extremely uncomfortable experience for them. And they often have a negative, bad reaction, like they'll lose control. They might fall. In the case of Semyasi, she fell on her head. And it's a long story, but she's no longer able to have contacts for this. She's in kind of a recovery mode, so to speak. But Billy still has contacts with Ptah. He still has contacts with Quetzal. No more with Semyasi. Spoth has passed away. Asket has gone back to the Tao universe. And historical trends grind on here at Earth. And we are left with an extremely good body of teaching. One particular book that Billy has is incredibly, well, I should say three of them, are incredibly practical in their teaching. And one of these books is called The Might of Thoughts. And on page 224 of the 2014 second edition, it says, "Therefore, it is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential upon which no one can depend, or upon which one can depend, excuse me, therefore in which one can completely trust. The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself," and this was one of the things that made me swallow hard and pinch myself and bang my head on the table a few times. It says, "The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself, lies in the consciousness, that is to say, in its thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond to a progressive, kind, and wise, equipped with a zeal for life and intention and endeavor, an ideal with an L on the end, and a good, positive life," and I believe it's pronounced seal, with a TZ sound. I'm trying to get at least a little bit better on my pronunciation. We are told to search for the source of the life power. And I wonder, I'm still, you know, contemplating after a couple weeks of meditating on this material, what the source of this life power is. And it's supposed to be some of our thoughts, or some aspect of our thoughts, certain kinds of healthy, neutral, positive thoughts, maybe, which radiate in our consciousness. We are told to search for the source of the life power and to develop it. And the source, the German word for source, is Quelle. And I'm wondering, I guess we develop this life power in our thoughts. The life power is known as Lebenskraft in the German. Well, I had an experience lately where I was in a crowd of people where I was noticing something. And I had recently, of course, been studying this material. And at least in my subjective opinion, these people that were at this place appeared to have a very weak source of life power. One individual who I had not seen in over a year appeared to be literally a different person. I would not have recognized them at all. If someone didn't tell me who they were, I wouldn't have recognized them. I was shocked to see the unfortunate transition that had occurred with this person in a very short period of time. Now, I do not claim to be a rock star or a movie star by any stretch of the imagination myself, but the last time I had talked to this individual, I remembered how unstable they seemed and how volatile their thinking was. By volatile, I mean liable to change rapidly and unpredictably, especially for the worst. So, in my subjective opinion, I sensed or saw this group of people. It was a crowd, a big crowd, and it just seemed to me that their life energy was very, very low. Now, we are told to search, and meaning to seek carefully and thoroughly, to examine in order to find something that's concealed. So this life power is said to lead to a life potential if we develop it. And, you know, I'm like, how do we develop this? And I've been thinking about this on and off all day, and it keeps coming back to the consciousness. It says the source of the life power, which must be created by oneself. To me, that is, whoa, it's overwhelming to think that we have to create our own life power. Everything is truly our responsibility. Lies in this power, it says, lies in the consciousness. That is to say, the thoughts, which must be formed and tended and nurtured. So we have to tend and nurture our thoughts. Now, in Contact Report 39, Billy and Pata were discussing the mental forces of human beings. And it was very interesting. One of them said, I don't remember which one at this point, said the following. It says, I'm referring to the fact that the mental forces of every single human being are capable of raising or lowering the life force of others. So your mental forces, my mental forces, if we can raise other people's life force or we can lower them, we can do the same to ourselves. So I wonder if when we're thinking bad thoughts, thinking negative thoughts, which I think it's very easy to think negative thoughts in the winter, in the cold, in the dark. It's very easy to think negative thoughts, especially when you wake up in the morning. And you know, but today has been such a, I've felt the life, the Lebenskraft very much today. Anyway, there is a creation-related force that is released as a vibration and a radiation. And when this force is released, it can influence everything. And in the earliest times, we here on the Earth had an average lifespan at around 1,000 years old. And we were still trained and informed by the Pleiadian ancestors, who possessed enormous level of knowledge and abilities. And so our life force and the life force of the Pleiaren worked together, and it helped us to have these very, very long lifespans. But the religions of Earth humans started to deplete our life force and shorten our lifespans. And Lebenskraft is mentioned in the book called the OM, the Om Fall and Mulatto. It says, everything that the human inherits, everything that he brings with him through the billionfold existence of the past, everything that he enjoyed, knew, read, learned, or experienced in his past lives, lies concealed in the unconscious. Now, if you start thinking about your unconscious, you also have a, at least I have, had a, it's you'll experience cognitive dissonance. I'll just say that. Let me continue here. It says, why therefore does he not master the technique of concentration, and why does he not order his unconscious and make full use of his knowledge and ability? So we have these tremendous abilities locked in our unconscious mind, because we've all been here. Even the youngest of us have been around here for like 4.5 million years in terms of our spiritual consciousness. But for this, it is required that he must fight his own stupidity. And this is a real issue. We have to fight our own stupidity. Again, that'll cause you some cognitive dissonance, if you think about that for a while. And acknowledge that the material intellect constitutes no human, if it does not also in the same measure work together with the spiritual intellect. So when your false self, as it's called in the book called The Might of Thoughts, when your erat self fights against your innermost creational personality, then you have this stupidity. The material consciousness will try to create a tyranny over the spiritual consciousness. Remember, the material consciousness is who you are this lifetime. It is part of you that had to grow up again, learn how to walk and talk, and it's fundamentally threatened by the wisdom of your spirit form. Your spirit form, I think, scares it. Scares your material consciousness at times. It's threatened by it. It's threatened by that wisdom. And I can only speak for myself. There are times when I can feel that false ego wanting to run away from this profound information. The words Lebenskraft is used in the Tree of Life symbol. The lines from the Tree of Life symbol. If you've seen Billy's spiritual symbol teachings, the Tree of Life symbol, the lines go upwards. In that way, the life's counterpart that go downward, you know, in the so-called peace symbol today, the lines go downward. And that's actually anti-life. It's the annihilator of life. The so-called peace symbol, the incorrect peace symbol that the world is using today, is a symbol for senseless death. And what I call my own name for the earth is the planet of unnecessary death, because senseless death takes place all the time. I don't want to even talk about that too much, because I want to remain focused on the positive. The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself, lies in the consciousness, that is to say, in its thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond to a progressive, kind, and wise, equipped with a zeal for life and intention and endeavor. When I say a zeal, I mean a zeal, an ideal. Let me read this one little section briefly, and then I'm going to change topics again a little bit. And this is still in the beginning of this page 224, it says, "This is in contrast to when tangled ideas confuse the thoughts and abruptly go from one extreme to another, whereby misdirection of thoughts arises and your emotions get triggered." Have you ever felt this happen? I know you have. I have too. "And even can even lead to murder and manslaughter." That's why we end up in such bad states. "There is no room for rationality and virtue in these tangled, irrational, and basically wrong ideational thoughts, because only rationality and virtuelessness govern in highly emotional forms from which a truthfully setting of the zeal and an imagination of the realization of a zeal are foreign." In fact, only a following of ideas, IDEAS, occurs. So an IDEAL is a mature thing associated with a life zeal, which is a destination point. The other IDEA is more of an impulse. And this is when everything falls apart, when anger kicks in and we're triggering emotions here. This is a whole, this one page 224, if you have the 2014 version of the Mind of Thoughts, it was something that when I read this page, well, probably for the 10th time now, suddenly my mind opened to it, which is an amazing thing. Because you read this stuff, and it's literally too much for the conscious mind sometime. And I think we have to repeat it over and over again and absorb a little bit at a time so we're not overwhelmed by it. It causes cognitive dissonance as you unlearn so many things which are not right. Let me jump topics just a little bit. My guests didn't show for whatever reason. And Jerry Wills is a great guy. I really like him, but for one reason or another, something must have happened. I don't know what yet. But I talked for the Meyer information for about a half an hour since he wasn't around. And I was reading a little bit from the book called The Psyche. And just to share with you, if you don't have this book, the first 30 pages for me were something I had to read like 15 or 20 times to really wrap my mind around. And this is where it talks about the age of the Earth humans, meaning that some of us have about 8 to 12 million years where our spirit form's been around. The rest of us, I think it mentions somewhere that our spirit form is only about 4.5 million years old. It talks about the material consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, the psyche, the gamut, things we've talked about before, but also talks about the devil. And the devil's real popular nowadays. According to Meyer information, he's more of a legend, that the Celts had a god of the hunt that had horns. This fellow had tremendous spiritual and consciousness-based powers. And the story is that two horn-like growths came out of his skull. He was called Tubal. The guy eventually died. And this term devil finally came over. Let me read this. It says, "Over the course of the centuries and millenniums, thousands of years go by, the name Tubal was changed countless times until the name devil arose from it, a name that was seized upon by the young religions. And in memory of the named horn god was added as a secondary god, as an evil counterpart to the unhorned God of goodness and love. So it's interesting that we have these two concepts of the negative and the positive. And there is a certain aspect of this which I think is creational, because the negative and the positive are two powers which belong together, and they should always work together, and they should never be separated, because one is dependent on the other. And I always tell myself, I'm trying to tell myself now, when you feel the negative come into your life, remember that the negative is there to help the positive develop. The negative has to be there. You can't get rid of the negative, and you shouldn't try to, or you'll go into what's called positive or negative at Sartung, which is getting badly control, out of control of the good human nature. Let me give you an example. We can get badly out of control when people become strongly under the influence of romantic love. And on page 246, and I'll just jump there real quick, it talks about this a little bit more. It says, page 246, thus, in the mentioned case, the positive, therefore the amount of work, provokes the negative, being the body's powers, while the negative, the powers of the body and the consciousness, provoke the positive, the amount of work, and so forth. The negative and the positive are the two powers which belong together and always work together and never allow themselves to be separated. Because one is dependent upon the other, however, the human being nevertheless has the audacity, which we try to get rid of the negative, to separate the two factors, then this asartung, which is kind of an unbalance, occurs on one side or the other. As a consequence of this positive or negative asartung, therefore arise exactly according to which factor the human being turns towards. The negative or the positive. If the human being does not use both powers and only turns towards one of the two factors, so if you're just being positive all the time, or you're being really negative and don't be negative because that's really bad, then you get out of balance. Then you fall badly out of control of the good human nature. This is why the neutral positive equalized thinking means that both the negative as well as the positive must be included in the thought patterns and must be tended and nurtured. So, we never lose sight of the existence of the negative. The challenging thing is not allowing the negative to have too much of an impact, because really, as we've talked about before, the neutral positive thinking is confident, it's optimistic, it's cheerful, and it's relaxed. At one point today, I was very cheerful, and it felt really good because I hadn't been cheerful in a while, for various reasons. So my life force felt much stronger, and I felt relaxed and enthusiastic and thankful and in harmony. And the cheerfulness is a state of being noticeably happy and optimistic. So this is part of neutral positive. So the education that I'm getting, very much myself, is the education of how to think, how we should be thinking. And the one thing that we're told to do is called the rumination. Let me read what it says on page 204. This will make it clear. They do not know about all the effort behind the imaginings and the wishes. So we should have strong imaginings and wishes. which every seal-striving human being must take upon themselves in order to overcome the apparently invincible, and which is necessary so that the vision, the rumination of the fantasy, can be brought to fruition. So your goals, your fantasies should be brought to fruition. Now, I'm assuming that no one out here, I'm not encouraging fantasies of nuclear war, or I'm not trying to encourage Jeffrey Dahmer, if there exists anyone out there that want to twist this. But a rumination is a deep or considered thought about something. Another definition of a rumination is to go over something in your mind over and over again. And I have been going over and over in my mind again about this life power, which we're responsible to create for ourselves. And I think this is something that religion had just infiltrated my mind with, and that I always thought there was this higher power, whether you call it the creation or the incorrect term God, that was the source of the life power, that it's our own consciousness, which is staggering, because staggering in terms of the responsibility. So let me continue. It is interesting also that the term rumination, again, is another word for chewing. So we're ruminating. That's how we create the life force, in that you're thinking, you're going over something repeatedly. And sometimes when you're striving for a seal, it often recedes again into the distance because you make errors or you have to do other things or whatever, so that your goal recedes off into the existence, to the distance. But as you strive, everything develops according to the laws of cause and effect. So what we used to call the so-called gifts of heaven are the gifts of the human being's own powers and the four nations granted to him and so forth, which are the products of our own efforts. Now this Meyer material, as you probably noticed, is extremely advanced stuff. And nothing that you wrap your mind around quickly. And there's a lot of fascinating stuff in all areas in terms of very, very practice, very, very practical stuff. And other stuff which is absolutely fascinating, which deals with extraterrestrial peoples. And in the Talmud of Emmanuel, and I don't know about Billy's new version, which is probably much, much better, which I don't have any doubt of at all. But there is a group of people, and these, I think these were the Pleiaren, and I don't know why they looked this way at this time. Or, I can't explain it. I don't know why they appeared this way to the Earth humans. But they're described just the way the Bible describes certain angels, as their faces shone like the sun, their eyes look like burning torches, and their mouths issued fire. Their clothing looked like a covering of film, their arms like old wings. And these people inhabited an environment of their own because of the air of the Earth would have been fatal for them. So I don't know if this was the Pleiaren or another group that was also here. And this was roughly, I believe, the time of Emmanuel. You know, and it's very interesting. The Meyer material talks about the people that came here from Mars. And we have Elon Musk now claiming that he's developing technology to take us back to Mars. It's very interesting the way these different, what seem to be separated concepts are kind of coming together in very, very strange ways. Now, these extraterrestrials, and again, I don't know if this is the Pleiaren or maybe these were, remember where it talks about the people that came to Melona and the people that came to Mars from the Sirius system and the genetically manipulated people, who were the people with the shortened lifespan, but they had the creator overlords, for lack of a better word, sometimes they're called, which came with the genetically manipulated people. So there's so many lines of history here with the Meyer information. Sometimes it's a challenge to follow all these lines. Well, there was one group on the Earth, and this is the same group whose face is shown like the sun. It said their bodies were white as snow and as red as a rose blossom. Their hair was as white as wool, and it just says their eyes were beautiful. And it said the people on the earth inherited this beauty and propagated it further. It's very interesting that even David Icke talks about the white race that came from the Caucasus Mountains. And if you look at the Caucasus Mountains, if you ever look, it's exactly like Switzerland. Very, very much like Switzerland. So we're going to see some very, very strange things in the future. We've seen strange things in the past. One of the strange things that's going on today that people don't know about too much is cloning. And we have human cloning that's going on now. And in the Henoch prophecies, it talks about cloning, military clones that will appear in the future. It's mentioned in Contact Report 225. And let me read this a little bit from Contact Report 225. I'm bouncing around a little bit today. It says, I will use your words when I fulfill the task intended for me, but now I would like to talk about something else. Already several times we've had discussions about the cloning of animals and humans. For me, it is completely clear as to what a clone basically is, just an internal and external organic reproduction of a person, of whom a cell is used for the cloning. It is also clear to me that the consciousness of the male cell donor or female cell donor will not enter into a clone, but that the clone is animated by another spirit form. So, clones get their own spirit form, even though they appear identical genetically to the cell or the donor cell. So just keep that in mind. The creation is still working behind the scenes. Thus also by another overall consciousness block, the clone has their overall consciousness block and another personality. So the consciousness of the donor doesn't appear in the clone. They're separate. So eventually, believe it or not, there will be, according to Meyer information, and maybe it's from the from the Talmud of Emmanuel, or maybe it is in the book of OM. I don't know exactly where I got this. It's in my notes. The uniting of humanity and the creating of the global language will occur at some point. Only then will you human beings learn to establish a good interpersonal and true personal relationship with one another. Only then will it come about that your earthly humanity will become united. a oneness in which the best language will be chosen from all the languages of all people in order to make this into a single uniform global language along with all the languages of the peoples. And I would assume that the Maya people would strive to make German the world language. The oneness is also mentioned in the Book of OM. It says, indeed, we may identify with this coarse material physical body and correspond to its requirements, and he may equate himself with the consciousness understanding, or himself feel his oneness with the real self of himself, which is the eternal, imperishable witness of both. There's a oneness of creation in the human spirit. Remember, the spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. And we really don't have a sense of oneness so much right now. We seem to be very much separated, the left and the right. I don't know if you follow much politics, but it's really comforting in many ways to look at the Maya material and understand that there is a oneness to creation. So ultimately, the forces of creation, I believe, will pull us together. The challenge is getting this information out and continually sticking with it over long periods of time. Because if we don't develop this sense of oneness, we'll have a third world war, which is really the fourth world war, as Billy talks about it. And we've already had the second world war. If you look back, for example, in Contact Report 260, it talks about Hitler. And it says that Adolf Hitler was, in many respects, a genius. His knowledge ranged from a variety of areas of art and technology concerning a variety of sciences. He was a life form of very good values initially. He wasn't very highly developed in his spirit, but a man of intellect and reason. And the Maya information said he was destined to lead the earthly politics and economy, as well as all the nations, in a positive direction. And then the Giza intelligences got involved, and they succeeded in taking possession of Adolf Hitler's being and misusing him for their dark and malicious purposes. Again, the Giza intelligences deceived the Earth humans for many years with religious miracles and all kinds of visions. And I believe this group is, of course, gone now, but they were here up into the May 1978, I believe, is the last date that they were here. And at that time, I believe, the Giza intelligence attacked the Semyonovsky Silver Star Center. But at that time, the Pleiaren captured them, arrested them, stripped them of their technology, and incarcerated them on a prison planet. Now, this was back in 1978. Now, however, the Maya material says we are under the influence of what are called telenotic impulses, which will continue to linger for about 200 to 300 years. And I wonder if these telenotic impulses, and this is speculation on my, are bringing out some of our negative thoughts. And this is why maybe it's so difficult sometimes for us to free ourselves from negative thoughts. So what was the agenda of the Giza intelligence? Well, they deceived Earth humanity with religious miracles and visions. And they created a religious delusion, and they wanted to appear as angels or gods, as they had done in earlier times, and they wanted to voluntarily subjugate Earth humankind into a state of worship. They wanted Earth humanity to literally worship them. This is weird stuff here. They had an alternative plan where they would try to reach their power by barbaric violence in a third world war, if necessary. And if that, under that aspect of their plan, they would have annihilated two-thirds of Earth humanity. I think there's still a group on the Earth that wants a third world war. And they want it to be between the United States will be pitted against Russia and China. And that's why in the news today, you have all of this nonsensical information that appears about Russia. And you see demonization of Russia. That's caused this. There is still a secret dark order on the earth. But I believe that, and my information tells us, that the extraterrestrial aspect of this is no longer here. And the negativity of the New World Order that we have today is just the negativity of the New World Order. So that is the good news. And this is why I believe many people all over the world are starting to take control of their lives and learn the power of their thinking and starting to be blessed in their lifetimes because they start to understand the tremendous abilities that the power of their own consciousness has. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I enjoyed bringing it to you this evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics host. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and hopefully be back tomorrow. And I believe I do have a guest tomorrow, so it should be fun. Have a great day.